Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Welcome to the Brad Sussmat Show. Probably tell by my voice, I am not Brad Sussmat. This is Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, filling in for Brad. We have a great show. I can't wait to get into it. Once again, it happens every morning. I'm one of those Starbucks slaves. I walk in and everybody wants to talk about the Cardinals, and it's happening again. Big game Sunday. The Cardinals will visit Philadelphia. They got, two more games after this. Are you worried about this game? I think fans should be a little bit, not so much what Cardinals are doing, but what Philadelphia is doing. They seemed a bit revived in the past couple weeks. People are talking about Chip Kelly losing his job. I think that's stupid. A guy's won back-to-back, 10 games last two seasons. Yes, they're struggling, but they're playing better. And I think Cardinals fans should be a little bit nervous. One, they're playing on the road, and two, they're playing a Philadelphia team that's pretty darn talented. Bottom line, I think the Cardinals match up very well with the Eagles, but it's just one of those games you have to be careful of, and every game matters now as the Cardinals are trying to build toward a nice postseason run. Eric Sorensen, are you concerned? If you were a Cardinals fan, would you be concerned right now?
A little bit.
What
a little bit.
You?
The weather, because it's going to be cold, and it's another trip back east. It's the last Cardinals road game, and they've been playing not perfect, but they've been playing well enough to win. And you just have to think, is this the week where they go back east, last road game of the year, and they stub their toe? Because right. Peter King, who joins us every week, Paula, told Brad that the players in Philly are now starting to buy into Chip Kelly. Not all of them.
Sure.
But he is starting to win over the locker room. I mean, and you look at, they won in New England. Like, that's a huge win. That is a game you cannot ignore, and you can't take this team lightly.
Well, and then they're in that crazy, stupid division where even their record isn't impressive, but everybody's struggling, so there's a lot at stake for them. I'm really interested to see what David Johnson does in this game. He's had two starts now, two games where, you know, he's had the rushing load. He's looked really impressive, but it's also time now that teams are starting to game plan on him. They weren't really doing that before. And if he can kind of keep up what he's been doing until Chris Johnson comes back, which won't be probably if they get in the Super Bowl, that's going to be good news for them. But David Johnson too is an interesting storyline to me, because obviously he's gotten better every game. He was making some mistakes early on. He's a rookie. That's what they do. But I was curious. I'm curious to see what he does this game.
And I think that the Cardinals secondary will be able to perform pretty well against Sam Bradford. He's been up and down, and you just get the feeling that if you can get that team playing catch up,
right,
you're going to be in a good position for the Cardinals, because Sam Bradford will force a throw.
Sure.
He will take a horrible sack like he did last week. I don't know if you remember it, but it was third and five, and he took like a 20-yard sack that knocked him out of field goal range. So the decision making isn't always perfect with him.
No,
but it's the NFL, and just when you think you have these teams figured out, the NFL does something crazy and a team jumps up and beats another team, like, you know, the Eagles beating New England in New England. Let's see what happens. It'll be interesting to see how Sunday night plays out.
Yeah, it will be. I'm looking forward to this game, just as a fan of football, to sit there and watch it. All right. So obviously, there's other storylines in town, although sometimes it doesn't seem that way. Last night, the Suns got blown out by Golden State, which is not surprising. Another game for Markieff Morris, where he is called a DNP, which basically means a coach's decision not to play. I mean, and I've talked about this before. I was one of the people that really thought the Suns could work this out with Markieff Morris. It's that Pollyanna in me where I think everybody's got some good. They mend that relationship and things will be fine. It's not happening. I mean, I think he has a fine relationship with Jeff Hornacek. He doesn't want to be here. He plays like he doesn't want to be here. His production, he's not even playing well. He feels like he's forcing it. I can't imagine that this guy's going to be around much longer. But it's just a strange situation. I think before the season, the Suns really had hope that they were going to work it out with Markieff Morris. I think that mindset has totally changed.
Well, and if you're the Suns, what do you do now? Because the window, you had a chance to trade him when his value was high, and then all the stuff that happened during the Super Bowl week with his brother, the assault charges, and then all the animosity and bad blood, and they tried, they did their best to publicly mend the relationship. You know, he spoke at Media Day and, oh, yeah, I'm fine. I'm excited to be here. Well, clearly those were just words.
Right.
And now you have a really good player in Markieff. Not an elite player, but a very good player who doesn't want to be in Phoenix. And every team in the NBA knows he doesn't want to be in Phoenix. And the Suns are sort of backed into a corner because you can trade him. But is he going to be just like his brother who is thriving right now with the Pistons? Probably. And that's just something the Suns are probably just going to have to live with just to get rid of him.
Well, and that was the thing I was just going to say. You mentioned Marcus. I mean, I think that's the best thing that's happened to Markieff, because teams are seeing when you get this guy away from that environment into a new team, just how successful he can be. Now, they're not the same player, but if with Marcus excelling, with people that in that city liking him, teammates embracing him, well, the same thing happened to Markieff Morris. And it's really, really sad, just as a sports fan, not as a Suns fan, not as a reporter, but just as a sports fan, to see a guy who was successful in college, come out of school, have so much ability, and let this hurdle really early on ruin his NBA career. It's just disappointing to me as a fan of sports, because it's sad that relationships can have that profound an effect on a player.
And the Morris twins I think they like the controversy. I think they like to stir the pot. They like to be, you know, coddled. And I think they like the attention. And both of them are very good players. But at a certain point, if you want to become an elite player or take that next step, you just have to leave all this behind and just go play ball. And who knows? Maybe if and when they trade him or release him or whatever they're going to do, like we talked about, if he goes to the next stop and he becomes an all-star, it wouldn't shock me at all.
I have never in my life seen professional players who are victims to hurt feelings as much as these guys, with the confidence and all the money they make.
Exactly.
All the adoration. I mean, in this business, in any entertaining business, you show a little remorse, people love you again, you know? And
yep.
It's just remarkable where it's gone.
Yeah, today's society is very forgiving.
Oh, my God.
I mean,
in a heartbeat.
If you make a mistake and you publicly admit you made a mistake, it's pretty easily forgotten. But if you keep denying it or pushing it off or causing more drama, you just stoke the flames on social media. And we all react to what we see on social media, right or wrong.
Right.
It's just our instinct. Like, I don't know about you, Paula, but when I get up, I go downstairs. First thing I check, missed calls, text messages. Third thing I check, Twitter.
In a
heartbeat. Just like every, it's just, you know, that's just the way we're wired. So
it's so true. You know, I always think of this when I think of entertainers showing remorse and how quickly people can change. Is that great Hugh Grant, the actor, he gets caught with a prostitute. Everybody's saying this is going to ruin his career. He goes on late night Jay Leno show, kind of jokes, you know. Leno goes, "What the heck happened to you?" And he kind of jokes about it, and he said, "Oh, I was a bad boy." People don't even talk about
that. Of course,
that,
right? Yeah. When you clown on yourself.
Absolutely.
And admit, you know, admit that you made a mistake, it becomes a very forgiving topic.
That's so. All the Morris twins had to do, but they haven't done it. So the other story that caught my eye last night was ASU goes up to UNLV, ASU basketball, without Savon Goodman. I thought they were done when I heard that he wasn't playing in this game, and beats UNLV. I thought that was a great win. This, to me, is a Bobby Hurley team through and through, because the thing that struck me was how tough ASU is playing. He has instilled, and I know this sounds so cheesy, but he has instilled this like tough guy mentality with this group. They were down, and I thought they were out in the second half, and the way they just came back swinging is really impressive. And a team I thought had no shot at the NCAA tournament this year, just because they were turning things around. It was going to take time to get his own recruits. They've got to at least be in the conversation. And in fact, one of those early, mock tournament brackets came out a couple days ago by a national guy, and they were in it. And that, to me, Eric, is incredible, considering where they were.
And look at what they've done. I mean, they're already building the resume before the Pac-12 season has even started. Road win at Creighton, road win at UNLV, home win over Texas A&M. And did you see any of the Kentucky game? They played very well in the first
they
half.
Did.
And the second half, it didn't go so well. But you get confidence when you play good teams. And I think it all started that win at Creighton. I mean, Creighton just don't lose home games there ever. And for ASU to go in there and face the adversity, and like you said, they're a mentally strong team, and you could not say that about a lot of these ASU basketball teams of the past.
You know, and I think one of many players, but one player in particular that has benefited from Hurley being there is Trey Holder. I think just from even game one of this season to now, he's gone against some of the top point guards in the country this season, and some people wondered about the mismatch and things like that, but he is playing really well, and that was going to be key for them this season. I think they had to have a point guard who could run that floor, and he's looked really good.
He has. And we'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens when conference play starts. I think like every year, the Pac-12 is sort of going to be segmented from the elite to the very good to the good to the below average, and it's pretty easy to tell U of A is going to be elite and some other teams are going to be very good. But maybe ASU can sort of push themselves from the middle of the pack up into the top few teams. And right now, this is a tournament team. As of today, they have proven that they can beat good teams, and it's just going to help the RPI down the stretch.
It's really surprising, but it's as a fan of college basketball, it's been really fun to watch. We have a great show today, and I'm really excited for our guests, particularly our first one, Michelle Tafoya, NBC Sports. She does the sidelines, and she will be working Sunday when the Cardinals go to Philadelphia. And I have followed Michelle's career since we were both just kind of beginning our career in Southern California. In fact, I remember a certain radio host in San Diego who heard her for the first time on the radio and said that she belongs in my kitchen doing dishes, not on the radio. So, ha-ha to that person, the way she's come back. We will also, of course, be talking with Jake Plummer, ASU legend, former Cardinals quarterback, now with the Pac-12 Network, obviously with ASU, too. And really want to get his thought on what the mind frame is of players down at U of A after they've learned that their coach has been applying for for a job with South Carolina. We've got all that coming up more on the Brad Sesmatch Show, streaming live on sports360az.com and azcentralsports.com.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360az.
The sidelines for the Cardinals game in Philadelphia, and I'm thrilled to have her. Michelle Tafoya, how are you?
It's so good to talk to you. And, it's a little scary to think of how long we've been doing this, isn't it?
I try not to think too much about it.
I think that's a good idea.
Michelle, obviously Emmy Award winner. I think I read you did 200 games now you've done on the sideline for NBC you're working for. You had a production meeting yesterday. What are the key storylines you're hearing about this game on Sunday night?
Well, I mean, obviously it's a big, big game for Arizona. They can, they can get themselves in the playoff, clinch a division, win 12 games for the first time. That's obviously one of them. I think when you look at Philadelphia, it's their running back situation and DeMarco Murray and what's going on there. How does Sam Bradford continue to play? Is he good enough for them to extend him after the season? I think at this point the answer's got to be yes. So it's an interesting game because Philly's been playing pretty well of late. They're on a kind of a roll here, and that division, the NFC East, is so wide open that they have an opportunity, but they're facing a really good Cardinals team. And the more this Arizona team gets on national television, the more people understand just how good they are on both sides of the ball and that they could really be a serious threat in the postseason.
You know, we obviously, there's great affection for fans here for Bruce Arians, the coach, and you hear about the players talking about him. I'm trying to get a sense of nationally what people think about him and what they're saying about him.
I think people think very highly of him. I mean, obviously, he's won Coach of the Year 2 times, and what we've learned about him is that we really enjoy being around him. He's a no-nonsense kind of guy. He's got a great sense of humor. Very accessible. It's been fun to get to know him, and I can understand why people who play for him or have coached along with him get along with him so well. And he's, you know, for as fun as he is in a production meeting with us, his players tell us you don't want to make him mad during practice or during a game. It's not that much fun, but after the game, he's terrific. And I've just had some unique experiences with him that show me what kind of guy he is, that he really is. He's just very grounded, very easygoing may not be the right word, because again, he wants to win really, really a lot and has proven that. So he's very good at what he does. But that organization seems to be in really good hands from top to bottom, and they like Arians there.
Yeah, I know. I think you've covered 8 Cardinals games. You've kind of seen some of the progression of this organization. And, you know, one guy that surprised everybody here, I think, this year and how he's come back is Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, there were people that were writing him off a year or two ago that, you know, Father Time had caught up with him. If I'm not mistaken, you have some Minnesota roots, Michelle, or you've lived up there.
Yeah.
Have you come across Larry very much? And what do you think of what he's doing this season?
Oh, this is a phenomenal season for Larry. I mean, you know, every time I see him, and yes, he's from Minnesota. I've lived here for now 23 years. I've known his father. I've worked with his father. You know, so Larry and I kind of connect on that little common ground, if you will. And what he's doing this season, you know, it's amazing because, yes, is he one of the older receivers? Absolutely. But he takes such incredible care of himself. And when he walks into a room, and when you see him on the field in particular, I think people forget just how physical a presence he is. And the hammering that he takes on the field, that he's, you know, he's not the kind of receiver that is afraid of contact. He's blocking really well for them. You know, he's doing all the things that you could possibly want a receiver to do, and he's doing them at an exceptional level. So this guy, just age doesn't seem to matter right now for him. And the comeback has been tremendous. It's been fun to watch. He's a terrific human being. He really is. He's a team guy. You know, he sat in our last production meeting with us down in Arizona and boasted about the stadium and how many sellouts they've had at the stadium and how good it is to be part of that organization. So I can see why the Cardinals absolutely love this guy.
You know, obviously Bruce Arians is a big fan of his, although their relationship took a little bit because he kind of changed the position that Larry was playing. But from day one, Bruce Arians has loved working with Tyrann Mathieu and has just had, I think, a special affection for him. Have you picked that up when you've talked to Bruce, and have you talked much with Mathieu at all?
Yeah, we have. And Mathieu's a neat guy too. He, not really what you expect, or at least we were pleasantly surprised by his personality, by his willingness to share his stories, and I can understand why the affection's there. You know, he has the relationship with Patrick Peterson, and that they went to college together. Mathieu ran into some issues. Patrick Peterson said, "Go live with my parents," and he did, and they straightened him out. And then, lo and behold, they're playing in the NFL on the same team together. Very, very close guys. He's learning from Patrick how to be a pro. And I think all of those things make it very easy to want to kind of take this kid under your wing and, you know, make sure he's got the right guidance. And so, yeah, I think Arians, first of all, any coach is going to be affectionate for a guy who plays as hard as Tyrann Mathieu does. And secondly, you know, terrific personality, terrific backstory. What's not to like? I'll tell you that in the last couple of years, the more we've covered Arizona, the more we've come to understand why things are going there very well there. It starts from the top, and it just comes all the way down.
And it's such an incredible turnaround for what this city has been used to with the organization. That's a really interesting observation. You look around, not just the NFC West, but in the league. You mentioned you think the Eagles are playing better. Do you get a sense of what's going on with Chip Kelly? I know there's so much talk about him keeping his job. What do you think about his future there?
I don't know. And I think it really all does depend on win and losses at the end of the day. And, you know, you hear a variety of things about interactions with players, about, you know, all of the front office decisions that he made coming into this season. But at the end of the day and at the end of the season, it's going to come down to, Do they make the playoffs? Do they do anything in the playoffs? And, you know, given how difficult, given the rocky start to their season, if they can make the playoffs, then I think if, you know, you're Jeff Lurie, you have to say to yourself, maybe we keep him. You know, if things go bad in a hurry here, then maybe it's more tenuous than that. But he's a unique coach. He's got a different approach, a different kind of personality. And, you know, it certainly worked at the college level. It certainly worked early in the NFL. And now it's just a waiting game. But at the end of the day, it always, and I hate that phrase at the end of the day, but the bottom line is it depends on results. How many times have people said, oh, Tom Coughlin's done in New York? You know, and yet somehow Tom Coughlin's taken them to two Super Bowls and won them both. So it's a results-oriented league.
No question. We're talking with Michelle Tafoya of NBC Sports, of course. They'll be covering the game Sunday night, Philadelphia Cardinals. And fans here are starting to get a little nervous, I think, about how the Seattle Seahawks are playing. They look a lot better than they did at the start of the season, Michelle. And I'm curious if you've had a chance to see them this season, and how do you think they look?
You know, when we saw them, they were struggling a little bit. But then they won the game, the most recent game we've had of theirs. They lost it to Green Bay when we had them early, but then they won our second game. They still have the same talent. They still have the same coaching staff. And look, think about what they've done in Seattle, too, and what Pete Carroll has produced up there with a quarterback who was drafted much later than a lot of starting quarterbacks in this league. And they certainly do have the talent. And I think that right now they're a team, really, that I think other teams are afraid of because they seem to be getting healthy and coming together at the right time. Now, their running back situation is a little questionable right now with Rawls getting hurt and Lynch, you know, really a question mark right now. So that may be something to look at, but I think they're always going to be dangerous. If they're in the postseason, they're going to be dangerous.
Michelle Tafoya, NBC Sports, a treat to talk to you. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Paula. Great to talk to you. Have a good one. Merry Christmas, too.
You too. Welcome back to the show. Paula Bovin filling in here for Brad Sesmat. And let's be honest, this guy is still a god in these parts. Everybody loves him. We're joined by Jake Plummer, former NFL and Cardinals quarterback, obviously played for ASU as well. Now is a Pac-12 network analyst. And let's get right to it, Jake. There's been so much talk about Rich Rodriguez. He interviews for that South Carolina job. You know, different ideas about what happened there. But I want you to take back, when you're a player and you hear your coach is interviewing for a job, do you think it affects these guys at all?
I think so. You know, I think that it sends, not sure what kind of message. You know, you got a coach that's preaching loyalty and commitment and, you know, loving your team and doing all that, and then he's out, you know, looking at a new job, obviously for who knows what reason, but most likely more money. So I'm sure the kids think about it because, you know, we still are talking about college athletes as amateurs. They're not being paid. They're committing to universities, and, you know, hopefully coaches show the same level of commitment. But to me, it's just as long as he's transparent and open about it, I don't know, you know, communication to those kids is probably the most important thing. And I went through three or four QB coaches in 4 years. So for me, they didn't let me know. They just called and said, hey, I'm taking another job. And it's more of a shock when it happened, you know, when I was there at ASU. But losing a head coach, never had to go through that, luckily, in college.
Did it bother you to know that they were, you know, so willing to jump elsewhere? Or is it just something you start taking, you know, thinking of as part of the business?
You know, I don't know. I'm not sure I enjoy the whole coaches moving up and the new hot offensive coordinator always getting the new head job when someone else fails after 2 or 3 years. I know that, you know, you hear that number out of my mouth, 2 to 3 years. Had Bruce Snyder been coaching, you know, in this era, we might never have had that fourth season. You know, he obviously was there for more than just 4 years, but that fourth year that I was there, those three prior, we didn't make a bowl game. We had only two seasons where we were 6-5. Now, that would get you to a New Year's Day bowl these days. But,
right.
You know, for us, it was a chance to continue to grow and to buy into the system and to believe. And I think that the ADs and schools are pulling the trigger too quick, firing these coaches when, you know, they only have maybe 2 or 3 years where they don't win everything. But on the side of Rich Rod. I think that, you know, who knows with coaches like him. I think they love the challenge of getting to a program and trying to turn it into a national power, and every coach wants to win a national title. Maybe he feels he can't do that down in Tucson with the U of A.
And Arizona plays this weekend against New Mexico in the New Mexico Bowl. And, you know, you mentioned that you didn't have the opportunity for early on for bowl games. I'm curious if you think – I'm just wondering what the mentality is of players when they're practicing for bowl games. Are they excited that their season is still extended? Do they wish they were doing something else? Or do you think maybe it depends on the bowl game?
I think it depends on the player and the coach and the mentality of the leaders on the team. You know, I think that any time you get a chance to play another game, you count your blessings and you cherish that moment, because after college, there could be, you know, maybe a couple guys that go on and play in the NFL or have a career past that. But for a lot of seniors, this is going to be their last time they ever play a football game. And to take it lightly or to not prepare for it or to not do, you know, what you've done your whole career, is a disservice not only to yourself but to the players that are remaining in the program. And I have had a little communication with Mike Bercovici just about how to make sure these kids know this is an opportunity to play another game against a worthy opponent. And at their record, they're lucky they're even in a bowl. At a 500 record, you know, you should be real lucky you get another chance to go out and get a chance to play for your school.
You mentioned Bercovici. Obviously, he's going to be playing in his last game when ASU plays in its bowl game. And what, in your mind, Jake, will be his legacy? I know the season didn't go as well as a lot of people thought. Are there traits about him that have impressed you and maybe what people should think about when they think about Berk?
Most definitely. I think the kid's shown loyalty beyond, loyalty that we don't see from many people, especially in college, whatever level it is, to stick with it. To not jump ship and go somewhere else, to transfer to another school where he could play earlier on, but to be patient and really fill in well as a backup last year. And then this year, I think he did a great job as a leader. And that's where I think his legacy can be, you know, something we look back on in a couple years when we see this young batch of quarterbacks, whether it's Manning or Perkins or whoever it is that's in there, has obviously learned from him how to be a really good leader, to be not only on the field but in the classroom and in the community, and just a top-notch kid with a lot of a real bright future ahead of him. And I think that's where his legacy is. He was loyal and he kept working hard. And I think that we'll see from these young QBs, you know, what kind of leadership qualities he had, and hopefully see his legacy down the road here, as those kids continue to hopefully, you know, take the reins and be the leader of the program.
We're talking with Jake Plummer, Pac-12 Network analyst, and obviously was a quarterback here at ASU and also with the Cardinals and in the NFL. And I mentioned ASU. They just hired a new offensive coordinator in Chip Lindsey. And there's been so much debate this season about the Sun Devils and did they try to, you know, fit a one type of quarterback in a certain type of system? Did maybe they didn't adjust well enough? Have you heard much about Chip Lindsey, and do you have any sense the type of offense that ASU runs here is going to change at all?
I haven't, you know, looked into him much or seen what he's done, but I know that Coach Graham, he goes after coaches that are inspiring coaches that are going to lead and teach kids how to play, teach kids how to get it done, and hopefully he's a guy that can fill right in and take those weapons they have. They got what the makings to have an amazing running game. We had a great running game this year, but with the running backs they got, they got some talent there. You put a good QB in there and mesh him with those young receivers getting some reps, I think he should be really excited for the prospect of what this offense could become. So, you know, we'll see. You know, it's obviously losing your starting quarterback. You got to get one of those youngsters to take the reins, and which one will it be? We don't know yet, but there's a great opportunity for one of them to step up and take over the leadership role. And with the new OC, imagine they'll keep, you know, the system pretty much not the same but similar. But who knows? We'll have to wait and see.
Jake, you played with some really good JUCOs when you were at Arizona State. Todd Graham has not been shy about talking about his affection for JUCOs this year again. He's recruited some more. Do you have any feeling about, you know, how many JUCOs a team should have? Do you think it's a good thing, a bad thing, or does it just depend on the player?
You know, I think it could be a really benefit to a team, to a program, to bring in a guy that's got, you know, a lot of reps under his belt and is hungry to prove that he can do it at that next level. A lot of the JUCOs are, kids that didn't make it through the system or were, you know, couldn't get their grades ready for that first coming out of high school, so they've had to go the other route, and that other route can do a couple things. They either can make them be angry at the system, or make them motivated, or can make them think that it's easy, and they get sometimes they get babied in junior college and come to the big time in the college there at ASU and can't fit in. But hopefully, like some of the ones we've seen, they've been able to come in there and make an impact. And I know firsthand from my experience, Derek Rogers was an amazing addition as a JUCO. The guy came in and changed the tone at practice. Was an awesome pickup for us. So you can go out and get a lot of good guys, and hopefully they pan out. That's the main thing, is hoping that they can pan out.
Well, we'll know soon enough with those players, Jake. I appreciate you joining us. Yeah. Thanks again.
Hey, thank you, Paul. You have a Merry Christmas.
You too.